Welcome to the Reader's Roundtable edition of Cattlecast with Jessica Trotter, Mari Garza, and Cheryl Lindemann.
Hi, all. Welcome back to the Reader's Roundtable edition of Cattlecast. I'm Jessica Trotter. I'm joined by Cheryl Lindemann and Mari Garza, and we are your cattle selection team. Hello, ladies.
Hello.
Hello.
So we were jumping around and talking about different types of themes that we wanted to talk about with these summer podcasts. And we came up, this one was kind of, it was open and fun. We came up with the phrase going somewhere else. And I think in some cases we were talking about being transported by books, books that travel, our travelogues, road trips, quests, those types of things. But I think we're all drawn to different types of books like that,
yeah.
And maybe places.
Yes.
What do you think?
Yeah, I think so, for sure.
Is there a home place that you just keep kind of going back to in your reading? Or time?
I think just the idea of going on vacation to a lake house or something like that.
That's a very summer theme there.
Lake condo or even a cabin of some kind. Mm-hmm. I really like that idea for me personally, but also in some of the books I like to seek out for summer stories.
I feel like I am drawn to certain locations at certain times of year more than others. So when I hit summer, I get really interested in Oceania, you know, like Australia, New Zealand. I want to read books about those places. I always want to read about England. That's probably my number one.
I've got that one too.
Yeah, it's like it's just there, right?
Yep.
And then as we get colder, I tend to tend towards Ireland. Ireland starts to crop
That's
up more. Yeah, I'm always drawn to Cornwall in particular or anything.
Have you ever thought about the timing in terms of
the
time of year
is,
when things draw me?
But, yeah, because I get to embrace that starkness and the cold, which is what I think of Ireland. I know there's the green of Ireland, but there's also the windy, you know, or the Hebrides or something, or Scotland, you know, that sort of embrace the wind and the cold and the starkness of the landscape, and it sort of comforting. Whereas this time of year, that makes sense, where Australia, New Zealand, more lush. Iceland is another location that always is always draws me, but not as much in the summer. Again, that's more of a colder place for me. So yeah, mine does have a sort of a time of year
I'm definitely
pattern.
I'm a Michigan person in the summer, because I think it was a staff person here, Jim McLean, a long time ago said, Michigan summers are so short, you can't leave the state in the summer.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, I think I get that, because there's so much
and
to
explore
see
it.
Here.
Explore it while you can. Yeah. I mean, up through maybe the color season.
Yeah. Now through October, really. Parts of October, it's just gorgeous.
I know. I try not to plan vacations out of the state in the summer, but it's hard sometimes. Yeah.
It's glorious every year. I think, wow, this is so short and so fleeting and so beautiful.
Yep.
So it's so nice to be in the middle of it. Well, I actually have a travel log of sorts, work of travel writing for my first book, and it's Among Flowers, A Walk in the Himalaya by Jamaica Kincaid. And this is one of those works that I was drawn to because a long time ago I read a book called My Garden Book by Jamaica Kincaid, and it also did contain some travelogue piece in it. And it was one of the most wonderful garden books I'd read and really introduced me to Jamaica Kincaid as a writer. She's a novelist. She's Antiguan American. And her books deal with a lot about the natural world, mothers, daughters, and a lot about colonialism. And she has an extremely strong voice. And fearless is one of the words I've read to describe her. Extremely honest, immediate. There's some repetition in the way that she writes, so repeat phrases. And again, this is a very, there's no connection, but in some ways that piece reminds me of Joan Didion. The other part of it that reminds me of Joan Didion in the slightest bit is just the strength of her voice. It's almost like you're in the room with her. And she can be exacting and tough on what she's writing about, but also on herself. Mm-hmm. And again, that comes through with colonialism from every angle, especially with plants. And I could do a whole podcast talking about colonialism and plants and gardening.
Yep,
and she's written
yep.
books about it, but this is very different than the native plant movement that we see, you know, and there's benefits to merits of that. This is completely different. This is going to the Himalayas on a plant-finding mission to get seeds to take back to her Vermont garden. And so this is a travel log about being in Nepal and everything that entails. So Maoist guerrillas, leeches, extreme weather.
She told us way too much about the leeches.
I'm not going to tell you all about the leeches. I'll spare you that. But if you read the book, you'll read it. Extreme swings in weather, from, you know, even hours apart. Sky so huge, it's like domed around you. These vistas that are just unforgettable. You go around the corner and she wants to go back because she's like, did that actually happen? Did I see a hidden lake in the Himalayas like this? And one of those trips that's sort of like terrifying and beautiful and awe-inspiring and makes you lose your sense of self. And she kind of enjoys that. You know, it's like truly transporting into that place where she thinks, you know, I'll probably never be able to do this again. And finding plants is part of it. I love Latin names of plants. I find them so enjoyable. I don't know what they all are, but some of them I recognize. That's in here. But it's really not completely. This book isn't really as much about the plants as you might think. It's about that immersive experience of travel, the good and the bad of it. So that's Among Flowers by Jamaica Kincaid.
Ready. Okay, so I have a fiction book that touches a little bit on history. This is The Girl in the Lake, and it's by India Hill Brown, and it was published by Scholastic Press, and I really lately have been liking their books, like the compact sort of fiction books, so that's just a plug for anything you see by Scholastic Press as far as historical fiction. This is a book about a family of cousins, maybe four cousins. They go off to a lake house at their grandparents' house. And now the grandparents live there full time. It was their vacation house for a long time, but now they live there full time. And Celeste is our main character. She's 11 years old. She has sadly not passed her swimming, I guess, lessons or, you know, her attempt at learning how to swim. It's something that's really stressful for her. And she makes some comments about how, you know, she found the instructor just a little overbearing and he had stinky breath. And to some degree, this book is about, you know, the various characters having a sense of like, you know, speaking up for yourself. And it's like, you're really, you know, I'm not learning this because there's something about, you know, how you're approaching teaching me. That's off-putting or something. So she's challenged to think about this a little bit over the summer. But really, so she's off at the lake house with her grandparents and her cousins. And something I found really interesting is that the grandmother says that your cousins are sort of like your first best friends. And I could really relate to that. I don't know that everyone can, but it was kind of neat thinking about that statement because it was repeated in the book a few times. And I thought, yeah, that can be true when you're really little. And I actually remember going off, I think it was to Houghton, maybe it was Houghton Lake, if there is such a thing, or mm-hmm. Higgins Lake, with my cousins. That was like one of my first times going up north. But anyway, back to the story. Celeste is in this house, which let's just say it's a little bit haunted. You've got someone who looks just like Celeste, who apparently is showing up occasionally. Celeste. Okay, I didn't mention this is a ghost story. This is a little bit of a ghost story. When I first started reading it, it sort of came off as like, you know, Goosebumps, that series by R.L. Stein. It's not totally like that because there are a lot of really interesting historical elements to it. This is an African-American family. The grandparents are of the generation that, you know, they were not allowed to swim in pools that were considered white only, you know. Mm-hmm. In some cases, they were not allowed to take lessons at all because the pools were so reserved for the white community. And there is a character in the family who apparently drowned. And this character may or may not be the ghost in the family, I won't say. But I found it just really interesting going into, you know, the mind of possibly a little kid who's thinking about, you know, what it means to confront this part of her family's past and sadly still confront situations that happen today with her grandparents, and who has a chance to exist in certain spaces and who doesn't, and mm-hmm. why do we persist in challenging people to exist in spaces. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I really, really liked it. Lots of weird things. Not sure exactly if you're going to go for that. I also would say that even though this is a kid's book, I think parents might want to read this with a child together, because I was kind of like, whoa, this whole idea of swimming being a scary thing for some kids can be a little, I don't know, chilling. Like, I wouldn't want a child to be scared of learning how to swim as a result. But anyway, that's it for me.
Then I want to talk about All the Horses of Iceland by Sarah Tolmie. This one appealed to me for a few different reasons, but it's really, as a former student of medieval history and a fan of fantasy, it sort of blends those two. It's written in the style of a classic, almost medieval travelogue or saga. And it creates the mystical origin of the very unique Icelandic horse breed, starting with the travels of an Icelandic trader named Evand, and he joins up with a group of traders who go into Central Asia, and he's going for horses, and that was always his goal, and he is able to trade for a large number of horses that he takes back with him, but there's a bit of magic that follows him home too. It's sort of retold from the point of view of a Christian historian who's gotten a hold of a manuscript that's been kind of, he doesn't quite know what the original language is, but it's also been done in Greek and Latin, and he's now copying it. And it just has that feel of an old classic story. And there's just a touch of magic to the story that happens in North Africa and Central Asia. And there's a sort of a ghost horse that follows him home. Mm. So it was just a fun, interesting twist. It's just a novella. It's not a really long story, but it's just a full, interesting story.
That is on the list. Excellent. Yeah, Icelandic horses are so incredibly unique as a breed. I would say probably the most unique, and the way that the Icelandic people treat their horses as, you know, really kind of sacred, is so unique too. Which brings me actually to my next book, which has horses in it as well. It's called The Ride of Her Life, The True Story of a Woman, Her Horse, and Their Last Chance Journey Across America. This was by Elizabeth Letts, who has written a work of fiction, but two acclaimed works about horses, historical, and about a famous show jumper. And this story is based off of some journals and a true story of someone who was considered one of the last saddle tramps in the 1950s. And this is a work of immense scholarship, of taking the memoir of Annie Wilson, the main character, memoirs, and actually making them more real and honest, and then piecing through all sorts of news stories to create the story. So what it is, it's 1954 in rural Maine, and Annie Wilkins lives on a really hardscrabble small farm with her remaining living relative, who does pass away. I mean, this is a tiny farm. She lives in basically a shack. She doesn't have electricity. And she's given about 2 years to live. And she's told, you know, you can go live in a a government-funded nursing home or something like that. You probably should. You're not going to make it through another winter. Well, she raises one last crop, sells the farm, sells everything, and her dream has always been to see the Pacific Ocean. She's lived in rural Maine as a family of homesteaders, really unique family history. And she says, okay, I'm just going to do this. All right. So she sells everything off and buys Tarzan, who is a really spunky, wild, fierce, powerful Morgan horse, my favorite breed. And then she sets off with Depeche Toi, her dog, this little terrier-type dog. And they travel over 4,000 miles across America.
On horseback?
On horseback. She's literally just riding this horse with, like, cans and things hanging off. She becomes broke. Then she makes postcards and sells them. So people start to love this. And they start to give her, like, meals in their home. She stays a lot in jails overnight or barns, but people all across the journey, there's this news stories, and they start to take her in. She's like part of a parade, but they love her. And it was like such a big thing. It was like, wow, look at this saddle tramp go. You know, and her story really inspires them. So she ends up being gifted another horse on the journey, a Tennessee Walker named Rex. She gets gifted countless meals, and really becomes a celebrity to the part where she ends up on Art Linkletter's show at the very end. I mean, she becomes that famous. And she's literally goes broke and then raises enough money again. Goes broke, gets gifts of clothing. She almost, you know, dies going through basically where the Donner Pass, and is stopped. And they're like, you cannot do this, because she doesn't really know. She didn't have books to look at before this journey. She certainly didn't have the internet, of course. She didn't even have an atlas. She used gas station maps to map her course.
I can't even imagine.
But it's sort of a woman who said, what do I have to lose? I'm going to die. I've got basically what they think might be lung cancer. I'm just going to do this. What do I literally have to lose? And that was her tough personality. So it's just really kind of a delightful book. It's inspiring. I don't know if fun's the right word, but yeah, you know, there's something fun about it. Just a really interesting journey. So, The Ride of Her Life by Elizabeth Letts.
That was cool. Another one I want to read. So I do have another picture book, and yeah, you'll notice my picture books are kind of summer themed lately. This is Summer's Call, A Michigan Day, by Amber Lynn Halliwell. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing her name correct. She is a transplant, so I'm not sure exactly where she came from, but when she did come to Michigan, she was, as usual, just mesmerized by our beautiful state. And this picture book is really kind of a celebration. I'm picturing West Michigan, but I could be wrong, of just beach scenes, lighthouse themes, blankets in front of a beach, an old home. In some ways, it was, I don't want to say like old-fashioned, not in a negative way at all. It was just very, I don't know, sentimental maybe in the style of the artist, who is Gretchen Ellen Powers. Very dreamy illustration. So it's a family that I don't know if they're spending a vacation or if this is really their home, but it resonated with me because towards the beginning of the book, it wasn't the first spread, I think it was maybe the second spread, it's like this almost like a triangle roof or ceiling. And each kid has like a bed side by side, and there's this window that's overlooking the lake, a wood floor. And I'm like, I've stayed in places like that. And yeah, it seemed very cottage-like. Mm-hmm. But like I said, could have been the home they stay at year round. But it was just really a nice look at the many different ways we celebrate Michigan in the summer. There's cherry pie and lots of places to visit as, you know, a family or on your own. This is not I'm sure there are lots of people who have activities that they do without little kids around. And towards the end of the book, what I really liked actually was there's like this activity invitation for you to start collecting your little mementos from the summer, mm-hmm. and to make like a mobile of sorts. So, you know, you find a shell or a piece of driftwood or a feather, mm-hmm. a stone. That was kind of neat.
Cool.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, so my next one is one that's been on my radar for a while. It's one we've kind of stuck in a couple of different lists, but just because it's the idea is so cool, and I'm just now kind of stumping in to say it's that cool. It's Music is History by Questlove. So I want both the book and the audiobook. I really enjoy the audiobook. This is a case where you've got Questlove, who is an iconic producer, DJ, drummer, joint frontman for The Roots, band leader for The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon. He's a recent Oscar winner for Summer of Soul. And this is a book that he wrote in the wake of 2020. He might have been working on it during, but it's very heavily kind of references 2020, where he's kind of really looking at how music plays a pivotal role in race, in gender, in politics, and identity. And so he goes sort of year by year, starting in 1971, which is actually the year he was born, just sort of picking out tracks, not the biggest ones that you know everybody's going to recognize. Some of them are like deep cuts, but on famous albums. Some of them are deep cuts on albums we might not know about. But he gives, in our kind of theme of being transported, he drops you into that year. He gives you such solid grounding in all the things that were going on at the time. And then he talks about that song pick and the people involved in it. And his encyclopedic kind of view of the music history and how it fits into history is really the connections that he's kind of picked out and realizes are there are just fascinating. So I would highly suggest the book. I think I want both. I want to be able to kind of take notes. I want to be able to sit down with, you know, your music source of choice, whether it's Hoopla or Spotify or whatever, to just kind of go through these albums and songs that he's talking about, because it's not just the song that he's covering for that year. He's, you know, he's telling you what the biggest stuff was, and then he's telling you why he picked this smaller thing. And, you know, he, for one, I think it's 72 or 3, he picked an album off the, he picked a song off of the Superfly soundtrack after talking a great deal about Shaft and how that sort of set it up. And it's just, it's fascinating. The connections are fascinating. The background is just really cool.
Wow. So that sounds great.
I would highly suggest that one.
Sounds like a good pairing with Hanif Abdurraqib too.
Yes, yeah. That very much.
Yeah,
very much.
Sounds so good. And a lot, gosh, talk about scholarship, right? All the work that went into that and pulling that out.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's fantastic. I have one last book today, and I always think, when I think about being transported, I can't rule out just picture books, and so many picture books that, whether it's in a made-up place that takes you there, or just being transported to the location in a, you know, biographical picture book, which is what the one I have today is. This is a book that's come out this year called Celia Planted a Garden. And my grandmother's name is Celia, so that sort of touched me. You don't hear that too often. The story of Celia Thaxter and her island garden. And this is by an all-star cast of authors and illustrator here. Phyllis Root, Gary Schmidt, and Melissa Sweet. And Phyllis Root has written over 40 books. Gary Schmidt has done Newbery Honors, Michael Prince Award. And Melissa Sweet is dear to my heart because I'm going to hold this book up for my colleagues here, but her style is unmistakable. And one of the things that's really unique about it is not only is it this beautiful, I think, watercolor style art that's very Melissa Sweet, but she'll also take words and turn them into art on the pages, and that's in all of her books.
Oh, okay, got it.
It's almost like watercolor with collage, mixed in. And one of the books I really loved of hers, one of my favorite books, is called Some Writer, about the life of E.B. White, a little bit longer book from a couple years ago. So I actually had recognized the island garden as a gardener. It's an old, very old book that has been printed over and over again as sort of a garden work. And this just tells the story of Celia Thaxter's life through a beautiful picture book. She lived, grew up on two islands. So the first in this, in an area that I was not familiar with, is called the Isles of Shoals, which is off of the coast of New Hampshire and Maine and Massachusetts. And it's a series of islands. And she, her father was a lighthouse keeper of all things, and on an island called White Island. And it was very beautiful, rocky place, but very white and gray. And so she, as a child, she planted a garden. And she was very inspired by tide pools, by the colors of those tide pools. And then she was 12. She moved again with her family to another island called Appledore Island. It was called Hog Island, but they renamed it Appledore Island. And they started a hotel there. And there is where she built, grew a huge garden. And they used the flowers in the hotel setting. And she then became a poet and a painter of the gardens. And she wrote a number of books. At the time, she was a very renowned poet in the United States. Also, a lot of famous people stayed at their hotel. And then over time, she's become more of a regional favorite author in that area. So her book is still in print, and the garden that she created has been recreated and maintained by the University of New Hampshire, and you can actually go there and visit it. And it's this gorgeous, bright cottage garden. But this book is just beautiful, and one of the things that really stood out to me, I loved this piece. It said, she started seeds and eggshells, bright pansies and asters, and cup and saucer vines. She put them in the sunlight that shone through her bay window. I just love the idea of starting the seeds and the eggshells. And this is like, you know, when she wasn't working in the garden, what she did to spend her time. But just a beautiful book, transporting, brings that sense of place right to the reader, and tells a lovely story of someone from that who may have been somewhat forgotten in history. Mm-hmm. So, Celia planted a garden.
Alrighty. Miss Marty?
So I do have one last book, and it's also a summer book. It's called The Depth of the Lake and the Height of the Sky. It is by Kim Jae-hyun, South Korean illustrator, graphic artist. Beautiful, beautiful book.
The cover is gorgeous.
Yes, isn't it? This is a wordless book. So, or a book without words, the way we call it, our catalog, or pictures without words. I have to confess that I'm not a big fan of wordless books. I think I'm, especially with picture books, I'm just really, obviously, thinking, shouldn't a book have words? Why? I mean, this is for families and kids, and don't you want to read? And
not always.
So, yeah, this was one that just really, really grabbed me. Like, I get it now. I get why people want to tell a story without using words, by just using illustrations. This was beautiful. It opens up with a boy who's in his apartment, and he and his family are preparing to go away. And little by little, as you go through the pages, you see that they're leaving the city. And guess where they end up? I'm going to assume it's their grandparents' home, but I'm not really sure. It's a home in the woods. And it's really a book about celebrating nature, I think, and slowing down. The times when he's alone, it's just definitely some of the most stunning images that she's created. And I was reading a little bit about her art. She kind of uses more of a pen. Mm-hmm. Just ink sort of style, but just really, really beautiful. And you see the boy kind of independently exploring on his own. He's not with his parents. There's no one telling him you can't go there, or, you know, be careful doing this. I really love that picture, and trust that all children can have some sort of an experience like that in safety. He gets to swim. He gets to hang out with his dog. And I'm just going to end with the last spread. Well, yeah, the two last spreads are just beautiful, with him and his dog looking up at the sky. And I guess I'll just say that.
Mm-hmm. Sounds lovely.
Yeah, there's a lot of good reasons for a wordless book. There's a lot of neat ones out
there.
Well, I think I'm closing it out this time. And my last pick, I literally just finished reading this morning because I wanted to read it and it was that good and I didn't want to stop. I probably could have kind of snuck through, having not finished it, but I really wanted to finish this book. It's worth noting that it's also Pride Month, and that leads right into The Secret Life of Albert Entwistle by Matthew Caine. This is brand new. It is the story of Albert. Albert is about to turn 65. Albert is a postal worker for the Royal Mail in England, in Toddington, which is north of London, well north of London. There is compulsory mandatory retirement at age 65. So he's got 3 months to figure out what he's going to do with his life. For a lot of reasons, and you slowly kind of learn them over the story, over the course of the story, he's really cut himself off from the world. His job is all he has, that and his cat. And over the holidays, he loses his cat. And he is just thrown he was already so off balance with the idea of retirement. But now he's got 3 months to figure out how not to end up stuck in this house alone without any connection to the world. He just doesn't feel like anybody would notice if he disappears, and he really does not want to face retirement like that. So he's decided. A number of things have happened to him to get him this way. There's one very tragic event early in his, right out of school. And then a very uncomfortable relationship with his parents. He grew up in a period where being gay was illegal, and he just had to create that shell and hide from people that part of himself. It's changed dramatically in this period, as he's about to retire. But it's so ingrained in his head that he has to hide that or not be that person. And his father was a policeman who did not approve in any way whatsoever and actually was very abusive about it. So that's created, this shell that he's got to have to bring down if he wants to meet with people, meet people, let his guard down with people. But he decides he can't do this. He really needs to reconnect. And he decides what he's going to do is track down his lost love, because that was the incident, the tragic incident early in his life. He ended up not running away with the guy that he was absolutely in love with. And he just wants to meet up and apologize. But in the process of trying to track down George, he meets all these neat people. He's finding different his place in the community and his comfort in being out. And it's just a neat story about connections. In a sense, it's the connections part of it. It reminds me of Remarkably Bright Creatures, which I talked about last month, or books by Ruth Hogan. We talked about Harold Fry. Mm-hmm. These different kinds of stories where it really, and maybe I feel it more kind of in the wake of the early pandemic when we were all cut off in different ways. It's that really emphasizing the human connection and needing people. So it was a sweet read. There's humor to it. It's just a quest to, find your place. Find connection, and maybe a second chance.
Sounds great.
It was very well done. And he does end up traveling all over the place and trying to track George down. And
Through England.
Okay. So up and down places they went as children, or children, teens, Blackpool and up to Manchester. And then somebody in Manchester thinks maybe he's down in London. So it's just, he's following the trail and trying to figure out what happened.
Yeah. Really nice.
No, it's fun. It's fun. All right.
Okay.
We'll see y'all next month.
Okay.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.